Hi there, folks. Welcome to the program brought to you, of course, by Midas Gold Group, MidasGoldGroup.com. Now is the time to invest in precious metals. If there ever was a time, with all the chaos we're seeing in the world, one of the safest places you can put your money is, of course, into precious metals. My guys over at Midas Gold Group can help you do that. I trust them. I know these guys. They're patriots like us. MidasGoldGroup.com. Go pay them a visit. All right. One of the subjects that I wanted to talk about today is very important because there's a lot of confusion surrounding this. How do we rein in the size of government? How do we rein in the scope of government? How do we rein in overzealous officials? Well, there is something called a convention of states designed to actually change the Constitution. There's a lot of controversy over this. There's also a lot of confusion over this. So I thought I would bring in the leader of the organization called the Convention of States. His name is Mark Meckler. He's a great guy, and I want to bring him into the program. Mark, welcome.
Okay, it's great to be with you. Welcome to Texas. I'm glad to be in Texas with you.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, talk about a free state. This is one of them. And I wish the rest of the country could be Texasified because we're doing it right in this state, like Florida is as well. But it brings us to this convention of states. What is this? What does this actually mean when we talk about doing something like this?
Yeah, I think this is a great question. A lot of people haven't heard of it before. What it is, it's one of the ways we can amend our Constitution. Article 5 of the Constitution contains two ways to amend. The first is when two-thirds of both houses of Congress propose an amendment to the Constitution. Then that amendment goes out to the states for ratification by three-quarters of the states. That's how we get all 27 amendments we have so far. The second way that we've never used is the states, two-thirds of them can propose amendments by gathering convention when two-thirds of them ask for it. They propose amendments, and then they go out to the states for ratification the same way. And the reason to use the second part of it is it routes around Congress, the courts, and the presidency. It's designed, according to George Mason, who helped us get it inserted there, for a time when the federal government becomes unresponsive. At the Constitutional Convention, he asked the men assembled if they believed that a federal government that became a tyranny would ever propose amendments to restrain its own tyranny. And of course, we know no government will ever do that. So, for example, Congress won't propose term limits for itself or a balanced budget or anything that would take away their power. So the only way to do that is to have two-thirds of the states call for a convention of states, and that's what we're doing.
All right. I'm always in amazement of the founding fathers, how brilliant they were in laying out the framework for our government. The only mistake I think they made, and I want to talk about this a little bit further down the line, but I want to still iron out the convention of states, is term limits. This is the one mistake I think they made by leaving this out. And I just think they never envisioned jet airplanes flying people around. They probably didn't think that anyone would want to ride a horse from Maine to Washington, right, you know, for the rest of their lives. But I want to talk about term limits in a minute. So this convention of states, you make an end run around Congress. You've got to get, what, 34 states to call the convention, 38 states to ratify anything the convention comes up with. How does that actually work? What do you do? Who in the state decides, yeah, hey, Indiana's on board?
So the way it works, according to the Constitution, is the state legislatures call by passing resolutions. And so it's important we make a distinction. It's not legislation. It doesn't have to be signed by a governor. It's a simple majority of both houses in each state make application by a resolution. And the way it really works is it takes regular citizens like you and me lobbying our state legislators, telling them that we want them to do this. We are doing that right now. The particular resolution has to be the same in all the states. Our resolution calls for a discussion of three things: the imposition of term limits, that's Congress, but it's also the deep state staffers and bureaucrats; the imposition of fiscal restraints on the federal government, like a balanced budget or tax caps or spending caps; and finally, the imposition of what we call scope and jurisdiction restraints on the federal government. In other words, telling them there are certain things you're not allowed to do, like maybe energy, environment, healthcare, the things that they were never meant to be involved in.
Do you worry you get too broad a scope, right? So I think it's pretty easy to have a constitutional amendment for term limits. It would be, you know, the country decides on that. But then when you get into bureaucrats, who you can hire and who you can't, spell that, there may be some constitutional issues there.
Well, remember, in fact, there really aren't constitutional issues here because what you're talking about is a constitutional amendment. So whatever came out of it, if it gets ratified, it is the fundamental highest law of the land. And so that would be clean. But we're talking about not who you can and can't hire, but it's term limits on them in the same way that you would place term limits on elected officials. So the founders never imagined that people would go to the capital of the country and spend 30 or 40 years there. And if you spend any time in DC, what you know is a lot of those bureaucrats have power. They're there forever. They outlast administrations. Fauci comes to mind, who's been there 40 plus years. And so I think the American people want to see limitations on those folks.
I think you're right. And, you know, many people will tell you that it really is the bureaucrats that are running Washington, right, D.C. right now. So, all right. So all this is certainly a discussion to have. Now you get the legislature. Is it up for debate over just the two houses and whether or not you need a governor's signature, or is that clear?
No, that's absolutely clear. We've passed in 19 states, and those are all on record, and the governor's signature is absolutely not necessary.
Okay. So are these typically red states?
Yeah, I would say they are typically red states. I mean, we do get movement in blue states. We passed out of two committees in Massachusetts last year. In Rhode Island, we just filed this year. One of our sponsors is a Democrat sponsor. So there is some bipartisanship, but primarily it's red states.
All right. Those who are against the convention of states will say, okay, well, we call this convention together, and then the liberals come in, right, and they offer all kinds of crazy liberal constitutional, right, amendments, and we open ourselves up to this giant can of worms that, yep, that ends up making things worse. What's your response to them?
Well, I mean, I've got a lot of responses to that, but let's start with what the left says about it themselves. People can look this up for themselves. Over 250 leftist groups in America led by Common Cause and Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, both George Soros groups, signed by Planned Parenthood, La Raza, MoveOn.org, and Daily Cause, and many others, say that what we're doing is the most dangerous thing that can happen in the United States of America. So if they thought that we could be taken over and they could do whatever they want in this convention, obviously they wouldn't be spending the millions of dollars they are opposing it. In fact, just in the last week, I appeared on Tucker Carlson Today for a one-hour interview. Media Matters has a long hit piece on this. I think they pretty accurately describe what they think we're trying to do, which is strangle the administrative state, go back to small government and to enumerated powers. And they hate that, and they write about it. So the left thinks that this is a very bad idea because it's a, from their perspective, a conservative idea. And in the end, Grant, and this is the most important thing, it's simple math. And I'll throw this out to your viewers, and they can do this exercise themselves. If as a conservative, you can think of any amendment that you wouldn't like, then list on a piece of paper the 38 states that will ratify that amendment. And remember, it takes only 13 of the most conservative states to stop anything. I've made that offer literally now for 9.5 years to many millions of people, and nobody's ever been able to show me an amendment you or I wouldn't like that could be ratified by 38 states.
Yeah, I mean, that's where it gets to bipartisan. Certainly when you talk about term limits,
yeah,
I would think even Democrats, except elected Democrats, the actual elected leaders themselves, would love term limits.
Yeah, that's correct. And look, it's 85% of Americans polled on average over the last 30 years want term limits. The same is true for a balanced budget amendment. So what we're going to end up with out of convention is not something that's radically right or radically left. They're going to be mainstream things that the American public likes. I think another really important one is something we call a single subject amendment. 41 states have this in their state constitution. It says you can't have giant omnibus bills. Every bill has one subject so that everybody knows what's in it. You got to debate it. You got to have a vote on it. And so you're on record for or against it. This is something we need desperately at the federal level.
All right. We're talking with Mark Meckler. He is with the Convention of States, talking about how we get through some very important constitutional amendments. When you talk about that one subject, is that a bill or law that was passed in these states, or is that in their state constitution?
41 of them have it in their state constitution. So this would just be modeling after those. And I wouldn't say it's always perfect, but it works to limit. And in this case, to limit what the federal government can do. Imagine if all these omnibus bills and all the thousands of things that are in them had to be debated one by one, just of necessity, it would mean they couldn't do as much. And that's a healthy thing for America. And then they would be on record voting for or against everything that they do decide to do.
Well, look, the last omnibus bill we saw, I think, was 4,000 pages long. They get it 40 hours before they have to vote on it. There's no possible way to read it. I would love to see a constitutional amendment that says you have to read the bill before you pass it. But I know that wouldn't probably go.
You know, we've actually discussed that, and we're trying to figure out. The question would be, how would you enforce it? Like, how do you know if somebody's actually read the bill? But I do think they should have to take an oath saying that they've read and understood the entire bill.
Wouldn't that be nice? And the reality is, nobody in Washington could actually honestly take that oath, because there's no way to read all of these bills. There's absolutely, you would spend more time reading than you would actually on the floor or visiting with your constituents.
Yeah, and look, we know that the framers hoped for that, actually. They thought that the House would be very contentious, that the Senate would be very slow and take a long time, and that meant not a lot would happen in Washington, D.C. They never expected the hundreds and thousands of bills that come out of Washington, D.C. every year, and they would be very against that. So any system that would go back to slowing things down and making them have to be very slow, deliberate, and transparent would be a welcome addition and would be something more like what the framers originally intended.
Yeah. All right, folks, we're talking with Mark Meckler. He is with the Convention of States. Before I get to some more questions about that, I want to tell you about Midas Gold Group. MidasGoldGroup.com is the place to go if you want to move some of your money into precious metals. They can take your existing IRA, your 401k. They can move some of that money into precious metals IRA. They're very experienced in doing this. A lot of companies can't do this. Some will tell you they can, but still don't know how to do it. The best thing about Midas Gold Group is that these are folks I can trust. I've met them. I've been with them. I've known them for a while now. And when you're talking about moving large sums of money with a group, you want to know you can trust them. So I urge you to pay them a visit. MidasGoldGroup.com, MidasGoldGroup.com. They've got great information on their website. There's a free guide to owning gold on their website as well. You can go visit them. If you're in California, you can visit them. But they do this work nationwide, and they're happy to talk to you on the phone. 855-322-GOLD is the phone number, 855-322-GOLD, MidasGoldGroup.com. That's where you find them. And again, when you look at economies failing, when you look at just the stock market collapsing, start to think about hoarding gold. Just collect it. Don't worry about the price of it. Just start collecting it. The guys at Midas Gold Group can help you. MidasGoldGroup.com, MidasGoldGroup.com. All right, Mark. So, we're talking about Convention of States. We're talking with Mark Meckler, who is leading the charge to try to organize a Convention of States. Now, you said you have how many? 18 states?
19 so far. I think we'll be at 20 pretty quickly. Got a lot of states pending right now. Montana, I think, is just coming out of a committee today. North Carolina looks good. Wyoming looks good. South Dakota looks good. Iowa. We got a bunch of states in the gates right now.
All right. So if you get those states, add to the 19, where does it put you?
My very minimum goal this year is 23. I just like the sound of it, 23 and 23. But I think we could get upwards of 25. That's kind of my stretch goal for this year. If we get to 25, that means we're in the single digit column, what we have left to go, just 9 more to go. By the way, when we started this 9.5 years ago, everybody just told us it was impossible and nobody would ever do this. So we've already proven we can do the impossible. Along the way, we've built the largest grassroots army in American history that's moving this forward in the states. So I'm very hopeful. My goal is to get it done by 26.
Okay, by 26, that's pretty good. So you get to the 23 by 23 this year. Then you need another 9, as you mentioned. Now you're starting to run into purple states. Is Arizona on the list?
Yeah, Arizona's already on the list. Florida's on the list. You know, I think you start to get in, you get into some states that are going to be more difficult. Yeah. There are currently 30 states with both houses controlled by Republicans. So obviously that would be, I wouldn't call it low-hanging fruit, but the lowest-hanging fruit. Every state is a unique challenge.
Right.
So now what happens in the last 4 states, that's the question. And I think part of the answer to that is we're going to start to see a swing in some of these states back to the red. I know we've seen some go blue recently. But our grassroots are involved in those elections all over the country as well.
All right. So what happens if Arizona, for instance, all of a sudden the legislature says, I can't believe Republicans passed this.
Right.
Now Democrats are somehow in control.
Right.
We're unpassing it. Is that a risk?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a risk. Any state can rescind the resolution simply by filing another resolution and passing it by a simple majority in both houses. So if a state flips in both houses, then we have a definite rescission risk. There's always a rescission risk in any state, and that's one of the reasons our grassroots stay involved. We have grassroots leadership teams on the ground in every state, including our 19 past states. They're all working really hard there in the legislatures right now. Here in Texas, by the way, got a whole bunch of people down at the legislature today talking about border security bills. And so we're aware of and waiting for kind of that backdoor stuff that's going to come in and try and pull this out from under us. And we're fighting that every single day.
All right. So what is the number one issue? Is it term limits? Is that the main goal of the Convention of States?
I mean, for me, it's actually not what is the, sort of the public number one goal. I would say the two most popular are term limits and the balanced budget amendment. Those are the ones people think of offhand when they think of constitutional amendments. For me, it's actually the scope and jurisdiction one, because the big problem we have in America, the root cause, in my opinion, is that the federal government has seized far too much power. The Supreme Court has put their stamp of approval on that. If you had a lot less power in D.C., if they weren't allowed to have a Department of Education or energy or healthcare or environment, all those things, and they went back to the states, the budget would necessarily shrink in D.C. The joy of being there long term for officials would necessarily shrink if they had less power and less money. And so I think it's really the big fight is around scope and jurisdiction.
Yeah. You know, I just was talking on the radio. I do radio in Los Angeles, Morning Drive. And I was just talking today about, you know, with this budget battle, raising the debt ceiling is coming up. Where can we cut spending? And I literally said, if I was in Washington and was in control of this, solely in control, I would literally do away with the Department of Energy. I would do away with environmental protection. I would do away with the Department of Education. There's plenty of things you could just literally do away with, because the states can handle these things on their own. Why is it that liberals don't understand that I'd rather have a bureaucrat, at least in my state capital, I'd rather have him in my county or city, but at least in my state capital making education decisions for my kids, not some bureaucrat in Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, and I think the answer is oftentimes, I mean, it's different if you're talking about the liberals who are running things, the elite progressives who are in charge. They love the bureaucracy. They love it centralized in Washington, D.C. But if you talk to regular Democrats and ask them, would they rather have the Department of Education in D.C. telling their schools what to do, or Department of Education in South Dakota or New York or California? Almost everybody prefers local governance. The fundamental question for Convention of States is not what should we do, it's who decides. And by the way, you're in line with what the framers thought, the framers of the Constitution and the founders. We all know about the fight between Jefferson and Hamilton, that small government versus big government. Well, here's something most people don't know. This is what they agreed on. They agreed on what they called exclusive spheres of jurisdiction. What they meant by that is, if a state can do it, the federal government can't, and vice versa. And it makes sense, because they just didn't believe that we could serve two masters. How would we possibly understand all the regs from the EPA and then the state EPA? And the answer is, we can't, we don't, and we need to do away with it.
So look, my philosophy on the federal government's jurisdiction is this. I believe the federal government must provide for the national defense of this country. That's first and foremost its job, to make sure its people are safe. Number two, I believe the federal government must provide for the free flow of commerce. If that means that the federal government has to build interstate roads and bridges to make sure that we have a free flow of commerce in this country, then that's what the federal government needs to do. And I also believe the federal government needs to be in charge of making laws so we do not have the Wild West throughout the country. You do need some regulation. You know, Milton Friedman says, when you have two or more people involved in a deal and one or more of those people don't get a say, that's where regulation comes in. I firmly believe that. I'm a Milton Friedman guy when it comes to that. Beyond those things, what else should the federal government be involved with? I don't have much more.
You know, I mean, regulation of foreign trade relationships, international relationships with other countries in the defense sphere. I think you hit on the most important thing to me, Grant, and that is, what's happened to the Interstate Commerce Clause? So the Interstate Commerce Clause that gives the power you're talking about to regulate the free flow of goods across state lines was originally intended to do just that, literally regulate interstate commerce. In 1787, those words mean different things than we think of. The word regulate to us means giant books and thousands of pages of regulation. Regulate in 1787 actually means to regularize or to smooth it out. It doesn't mean to control it and to tell people everything they can and can't do. Interstate meant the same thing. Commerce actually meant the shipment of goods across state lines. So we think of commerce as business. So now we look at the Interstate Commerce Clause, and this is how the Supreme Court interprets it, which is to promulgate regulations around any kind of business that in any way affects states across state lines. It's just not what the founders intended. They were trying to prevent trade wars between the states. There was actually a trade war going on between New York and New Jersey at the time of convention. They were about to come to military blows, and the convention intended to end that. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court has now interpreted the Commerce Clause so broadly and so boldly. All those agencies you said that you don't think we need, energy, environment, all these things, education, these are authorized under Supreme Court interpretations of the Commerce Clause. You don't find them in the Constitution anywhere. So I think we need to do what you're talking about. Let's take the federal government back to what it was intended to do, which is just smooth out interstate trade.
I think people forget, and we're talking with Mark Meckler, who is with the Convention of States, really leading the charge to get a constitutional amendment to rein in the scope and size of government and put term limits on our officials, which would be a great idea. I think when you look at what's happening at a federal government level, that people would be hungry to understand that the government is not spending as much money and only spending money on things that we need the federal government for. The states can regulate these things. You know, the Environmental Protection Agency, the states can regulate that. Now, they'll say, okay, well, if Texas is emitting something in their state and it's blowing into Arkansas or into Louisiana, then they need the – but they don't. The courts are set up to actually handle these disputes.
Yeah, that's correct. I hear that all the time. Well, and that's the quintessential one, water flowing, air blowing across state lines. The federal courts are there to deal with that. They've done it throughout our history, and they do a very adequate job of it. We don't need an EPA to handle that for us.
Yeah. What do you think ends up happening here? So say we ultimately get a convention of states. I think that the left would go I mean, nuts. I mean, that would be crazy. I can only imagine the protests and destruction. If you thought the summer riots of 2020 were bad, could you imagine having a convention of states in Dallas, Texas, and the Antifa loons coming into town? I mean, this will cause all out chaos.
Yeah, in fact, in a way, it already is. I mean, what we see, Russ Feingold, the former communist senator from Wisconsin, wrote an entire book objecting to this, attacking me by name. Rick Santorum, who works for us, attacking him by name. We had the Media Matters hit piece last week after I did Tucker. We had a New Republic hit piece a couple of months ago. So the left is already all over this. This terrifies them. And I agree with you. When we get into convention, all heck is going to break loose. I'm sure security is going to have to be tight. Antifa is going to be there. And every other bad person and bad thing in the United States right now.
Well, you need to hold one of these conventions in a state like Texas or Florida, absolutely, where we respect law enforcement and have no tolerance for Looney Tune activity in our streets. We're talking with Mark Meckler with the Convention of States. Speaking of a tyrannical, overreaching government, folks, I want to tell you about my friends over at J6 Truth. I've got a gentleman who's become a friend of mine. His name is Jake Lang. He is a political prisoner. He is in the D.C. gulag. He's been moved around to a bunch of prisons. I want you to listen to this message that he is offering up for us. This is J6 Truth.
You've heard and seen the raw, uncut truth about the brave men and women, patriots that were wrongfully arrested on January 6th by the tyrannical Biden regime and corrupt DOJ. But with your support, Jake Lang and all the January 6ers can find justice. Here is his message.
Hello, my name is Jake Lang. I'm a January 6th political prisoner who has been held in solitary confinement for over 21 months by the Biden tyrannical regime. I'm not going to lie to you. The need is great. The corrupt DOJ and wicked FBI have doubled down on hundreds of innocent J6 patriots and pushed for harsh prison sentences of up to 10 years. We are putting together a legal fund that can help out the January 6ers, and we need your support. Please go to j6legal.org right now and give from your heart whatever God tells you to. We need your support. The need is great. The time to donate is now. Thank you, and God bless you.
Okay, that is Jake Lang with j6truth.org, j6truth.org. I urge you to pay them a visit and help them out if you can. All right, my guest today is Mark Meckler. He is with the Convention of States. Mark, you mentioned you went on Tucker Carlson. That always sends the left into the stratosphere. You mentioned Media Matters. I've been a constant target of Media Matters, and you know what always amazes me? I think the people out there will be very surprised to learn every time they write about me, they get it exactly right.
Yes.
They literally quote me exactly what I say. And I said, hey, you know what? You nailed it.
You know, it's really funny because when this hit piece came out a few days ago, I read it and I thought, wow, I didn't even have to pay for that. That's excellent. Right. I mean, they absolutely nailed it. And I got to give them credit for that. And then what they do is they express their opinions, how everything you say is horrible, vile, and hateful. But they generally do get it factually correct. And I would say this was about 90, 95% correct. And I consider, like, this is my first time on Media Matters. So for me, it was a great honor. That's like getting your 8-point trophy buck mounted on the wall.
Absolutely. Congratulations on showing up in Media Matters. You know, Media Matters, for all of you out there that don't know, it's basically a tip sheet for the mainstream media. They write these little articles and the mainstream media will take those articles and they will run with them as their own stories. It really is a daily tip sheet for the left-wing media. All right, I want to, before I let you go, really dig down on term limits. Why is it, Mark Meckler, with Convention of States, do you think that the Founding Fathers did not envision the importance of term limits?
I think there's a few reasons. I mean, one is they didn't have experience with people staying in politics forever. Almost everybody who was engaged in politics actually had a career doing something else productive. They were farmers or merchants or lawyers. They were doing other things, and they had no desire to be in a faraway capital, as you described at the beginning of the show. They might have to ride by 5 days on horseback to get to this capital. They had no desire to spend all of their time there. And frankly, it wasn't very prestigious. It wasn't like something that made them famous, or they didn't get paid a lot of money to do it. And so I just don't think that they expected people to be in the situation where Ben Franklin said, if we ever marry money and fame in politics, we're going to be in big trouble. And that's what we've done now. They just didn't expect that to happen.
Well, it amazes me that people can go into office. I mean, you just look at the Nancy Pelosi's and Chuck Schumer's and heck, even Republicans that come out so wildly wealthy, and they're supposed to be public servants. And you wonder, how in the world did they do that? Even with some of these bills that have been passed, the Stock Act and all this stuff, they're still profiting off their inside information.
I mean, look at Joe Biden. He's the quintessential example now, 50 years in quote unquote public service. He's a multimillionaire with multiple homes, but he's always been on the public payroll except for 2 years of his life. So how did he manage to do this? And it's because they are getting insider information. These guys are the best stock traders you could ever imagine in your life. They get pieces of deals that they wouldn't otherwise be in. I heard Hunter Biden, who wasn't even elected, saying he wouldn't have been on the board of any of these companies if it wasn't for his dad's name. So they are definitely, these guys are profiting off of being in politics, and that should never happen.
I don't mean to laugh, but could you imagine Hunter on the board of anything? If it wasn't for his father's name, I mean, this is a guy who literally has profited off the Biden family name and is used as the chief salesman for the Biden family name. Hunter Biden would be a nobody. And honestly, I mean, look, people always say I'm out there blasting all the time, which I normally am, Mark, but I'm gonna show some grace here. I actually think Hunter Biden's inferiority complex to his father and his brother and is not living up to all expectations may have been what pushed him over the edge into his drug abuse and the prostitutes and all of these things. He's like searching for, because he's just a useless, worthless dude. And so,
I look at that family and I have pity on that family. It's a family with serious emotional problems. Obviously, serious family dynamic problems. We're learning more and more of that. I think more and more of that's going to come out. You have Jill Biden, who pretends to be a doctor because obviously she didn't feel good enough about herself. She had to go get a fake doctorate so she could be called doctor by everybody. Yeah. And again, Joe Biden, who I think is actually one of the dimmest people in American politics, certainly one of the dimmest people ever to be president of the United States. And at this point, frankly, completely mentally incompetent due to dementia. And that family is still riding the pinnacles of power.
Yeah, and the pity I show almost ended when he became president of the United States, though, because now I believe he's a national security risk.
For sure.
And I pity the American people who have to be under his tyrannical rule, or whoever is really pulling his strings. Last question for you. So if we institute term limits, what are the terms? How much for a congressman? How much for a senator?
You know, I think this is going to be a great debate at convention. We had a simulated convention back in 2016, and the debate around this particular point was pretty heated. Where they came down, the suggestion that they made was 12 years in the House and 12 years in the Senate. So that'd be 6 terms in the House and 2 terms in the Senate. And they came down with that because they said, look, they know their constituents want this. They also acknowledge that you've got to have a certain amount of seniority to even really understand how DC works. That's what they came up with. Another kind of term limits that I'm interested in is that you can't serve more than 2 consecutive terms. And so that would allow people to come out, go back to the private sector, perhaps, I would say, as long as you ban lobbying for people who've been in public office, and then come back later on if people really want them. So there's a whole bunch of different ways to slice this one. And I think it'll be an interesting debate at convention.
You know, I'd love to get your opinion. I had come up with an idea. I had run when I ran for Congress back in 2011 in a Republican primary to take out speaking of a guy who became wildly wealthy in office, his name was Kenny Marchant, and he was just part of the D.C. swamp. I lost, but I gave him a very, very good run, and I was running on term limits. And I said, if you couldn't get a convention of states and you had to get it through Congress, what if you came up with a bill where you grandfathered anybody who was elected into office, already a congressman or a senator, they were grandfathered in, and anybody new had to be subjected to term limits. And I was like, this could be a way we get these blowhard, you know, self-grandized people to vote for this.
Yeah, and I actually think, Grant, not only is that a good idea, it's likely the way it would pass. It's likely that folks would say, look, if you didn't run knowing that you had term limits in front of you, that's not fair to impose that on you. I could argue that, but I think the way you just described it is the way it's most likely to come out of, even out of convention.
Even out of convention. Interesting. Well, it's fascinating stuff. It's a fascinating topic. And I know you've devoted much of your adult life now to this, to getting this through. And I hope it happens, because the more I study, I was very skeptical. I will tell you, Mark, early on, I was worried it could be abused, but I think there's enough checks and balances in there where we could push that back. And I'm on board with this convention of states, because we're at a point now where something needs to be done. I'll give you the last word.
Yeah, you know, I know one of the reasons you and I are talking right now is because you met our activists out in the field, and that's really who makes this happen. There are millions of them all over the country. They're in every state legislative district. We're supported by great conservatives like you, people like Ron DeSantis, Tucker Carlson, Levin, Shapiro. So this is truly the heart of the conservative movement. For those who are concerned about it, you should go to conventionofstates.com, get the real information. The debate is there if you want to see the debate around this. Look at all the people who support, look at all the people who oppose, and then get in the fight. Sign up, sign the petition, and then volunteer to get involved. Click the Take Action tab and actually do something instead of just listening to me and Grant yammer on.
Yeah, yeah, it really is about a solution, and you can get involved to help with that solution. People are always asking me, Grant, what can I do? This is a great example of what you can do. Mark Meckler, it's a great pleasure having you on the program. I appreciate you coming on today.
Thank you for having me, Grant. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. All right, folks, quick reminder, GrantStinchfield.com, GrantStinchfield.com to get Stinchfield's Army merchandise. Please subscribe to the podcast. If you're watching this on video, hit like, but it's important that you tell all your friends about this. This is how we spread the word. And my buddy Mike Lindell over at MyPillow.com, MyPillow.com/Grant, up to 66% off these Giza sheets. I freaking love them. This is not a joke. I love them. They got the slippers and, of course, his pillows. Up to 66% off. All you have to do is use the promo code Grant at MyPillow.com. Please go pay them a visit. That's going to do it for us. Stinchfield's Army Rolls. Thanks for watching, everybody.